Blog Talk Radio.
Stanley, Sports and Death, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's a Sunday. It's sports wrap-up time. The crew is here. And we give shout-outs to Tony Lopienko. It's Wednesday. I got to make sure I pronounce the right pronunciation. I talked to my man earlier, Tocino. There'll be a special guest name for the man who played the mayor. And Tony nominated Oscar performance in the Oscar-winning movie, one of the legendary actors of our time, and a former Golden Glove champion himself. Doc Stanley, Sports Net Power Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. The Open Air Show. The Hound out here taking the hats off. And then John Coltrane, the iconic John Coltrane, lead us into prayer of this iconic, no, the one and the only, dear Lord. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you for the little things we so largely take for granted. Let your way be our way. Thank you for the mother said we woke up clothed in our right mind. Thank you, Lord, for blessings that have come unseen or unmerited. More importantly, Lord, thank you, you are our God. And we pay homage to you on your special day, the Sabbath, for every day is so. We pray to the Lord. We ask these blessings, all the blessings. In the name of your darling Son Jesus, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. We all bow our heads and have respect. Thank you, Lord. Amen. Back, Stanley Turrentine. The world needs now love, sweet love, all the time. Doc Stanley Sports and Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network, the Sunday Sports Wrap Up last Sunday. Good morning, day. And my brother said something today that was so profound. Every day, his mother. And we're just going to take a moment to remember mom. Intruders, please, jump.
I'll always
guys always love their mama. We remember our beloved mothers and Jump Shot Jonesy and the Hooster, our basketball experts, Jimmy Remington, who now hold cherished memories of their mother. And without question, they were beautiful people. They brought us beautiful young men. With that, without further ado, it's time to come on in to Sports and Depth, Blog Talk Radio, and the Trust and Government Network. Ain't nobody. That was the thing. That's our late posse member, Mel Smith Jr. used to open. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. The Sports and Depth posse is here. And the man who stirs the drink is here, Doc Stanley. Nobody will ever say it again like Mel. There'll never be another Mel. As you know, we've dedicated the last few shows to Mel as he had open heart surgery. And then, unbeknownst to us, he had another heart attack. And Mel passed on. He'll always live forever in our hearts and minds, and the integral part that he played in this show and our lives. And we just will miss him immensely. Thank God that there was a Mel Smith Jr. And we want to take a quick moment of silence. And once again, remember, as we play Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, remember Mel Cosell Smith Jr., a.k.a. Rooney, a.k.a. Drew Cooper.
Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me.
Thanks here, real quick, demo of the top. As we know, we open every show. I was, you know, this is a month of a lot of birthdays in boxing. And yesterday, the 17th, was that of Ray Charles Leonard from Palmer Park, Michigan. Now, ironically enough, the third of this run is the birthday of the man who he asked could he use that prefix, Walker Smith Jr. Excuse me, Sugar Ray Robinson. On the 6th, Sugar Ray Robinson is the best all-around fighter in history of boxing, without question, unequivocally. Willie Mays is the best all-around player in history of baseball. His birthday is May 6th. On the 11th, the greatest amateur fighter in the history of sports and boxing. And that was none other than Mark Breland. Mark Breland won every conceivable award at the highest level possible. Amateur boxing, and finished with an amateur record of 110-1. 110-1. A lot of winning. On the 13th of the month, the man who was singing this song, Stevie Wonder, celebrates another birthday, along with the late great, the longest reigning heavyweight champion in the history of boxing, the Brown Box, Joe Louis. So let's do it again. The 3rd, Sugar Ray Robinson. On the 6th, Willie Mays. On the 11th, Mark Breland. On the 13th, Stevie Wonder and Joe Louis. And the 17th yesterday, great Charles Lynch, who beat every great fighter of his era. Well, with that, it's time to ring the bell. Fox Terry Sports and Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network. It's a Sunday sports wrap-up. Let's go talk to the posse. Let's talk basketball. Let's talk boxing. Let's talk everything. Before we get off, I just want to, again, salute my good friend, Tony Lobianco. He's having a dish this Wednesday named after him. at the Pico Flor restaurant. That's 230 East 44th Street, close to the 2nd, or is that close to the 3rd? My man Ticino told me 6:30 to 8 o'clock, special affair there. If you're going to come on down, it's going to be a $35 fee to join Tony and company and the Ticino. And the chef is Gia Franco. It's a special a la little flower, Tony Lo Bianco. You know, Tony played the great mayor, probably the greatest mayor of New York City history, Fidel LaGuardia, and he played on Broadway. Tony, as you know, also, besides being an outstanding and a legendary actor, is an outstanding director, producer, and director. And Tony won the Circle Award he also was nominated for a Tony for A View from the Bridge. New York born, New York bred, and New York Golden Glover. And Tony, I first met Tony so often, Dr. Fife, to the legendary Felt Forum. In fact, you know, we're going to Wings for Wings. Why don't you just read that whole promo about the this happening this Wednesday for Tony Lo Bianco, New York born and bred actor, a renowned producer, director, and writer, a Golden Glove champion himself. And he was in the that Oscar-winning picture, The French Connection. He's been on Broadway, a tremendous job playing the mayor. And without further ado, Wings, read that that information for us, Tony, and what's happening this Wednesday at the restaurant.
The email from Tony states, "Hello, my friends. It is not just on stage as Fiorello LaGuardia that ties me with the little flower. Colo Fiorello Ristorante, which in Italian means little flower, is naming this in my honor, Spaghetti a la Little Flower, from Tony Bianco. Next Wednesday, which is this week, May 21st, there will be a special dinner at the restaurant in New York City to unveil the new dish, Spaghetti a la Little Flower, from Tony Bianco, prepared by Chef Gianfranco. It starts at 6:30 p.m., cocktail hour, and dinner's at 8. For reservations, you can call 212-922-0581 or visit the website of the restaurant, www.thecolofloornyc.com. That's www.thecolofloornyc.com. It will be located at 230 East 44th Street in the borough of Manhattan. That is this week, May 21st, at 6:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm. And Ticino is the manager there. They need to make a call down, ask for Ticino. It's going to be quite an affair, and we want to thank them. And this first half hour of Sports and Death is brought to you by the Little Flower Restaurant, located on the east side, right on 44th Street between 2nd and 3rd. And if I got that right, Ticino may kill me. Make sure I got that right. And so for the first half hour of Sports and Death, brought to you by Little Flower Restaurant, which is saluting Tony Lo Bianco. Tony, just one of the legendary actors of his time and of all time, and beyond the screen and stage, an outstanding writer, director, and producer in his own right. Once again, I mentioned some of those. Tony received a Tony nomination, View from the Bridge, was in the Oscar winning, and also the picture along with the Oscar for that year. The man who carried won the Oscar that year, playing the famed detective. And frankly, I saw him down at the Felt Forum. And also, Tony has won an award as a director and a writer. Real quickly, the Renaissance period of the African American in sports. We've got a picture there. We want to thank, had that screening this past Thursday. And want to thank Ms. Gina Torres, the vice president of PMG. She did the PR. Hennessy had a very great time with them. I want to thank them. And it's a very, very lovely and intelligent lady. The photo we show, a whole horde of them, the Hennessy photo. See the Hennessy ladies, they either make you want to have a drink or will try to drink, lovely young ladies. And the photo, Lori Stokes, the daughter of the first African-American mayor in Cleveland. And also there's a picture, quite unique. Harrison Dillard is there, along with the oldest living Olympian from 1948 Olympics, Herb Douglas, who so often was the man that put together the Jesse Owens Center to honor, as Harrison Dillard and Herb talked about being in Cleveland and seeing Jesse Owens come down the street in that parade, and just, as Herb said, a hero for African Americans, a hero finally. And remember, there was no baseball players, a hero. And Harrison Dillard talked about running home and running through the, throwing back the screen door and telling us, my, I just saw Jesse Owens. You know, I'm going to be just like him when I grow up. And he said, yeah, sure you are, son, sure you are. And Charles Jenkins Sr. talked about Harrison Dillard with a tremendous running. Harrison was going to make the Olympics as a hurdler, but he knocked over one of the hurdles. So he simply ran to 400 and 100 and won gold medals. I mean, it's like a guy saying, what? I get it too late for basketball practice? Okay, so I'll be an All-American in football and baseball. I mean, it's right. I got a chance to talk to Mr. Dillard, but have him on the show down the line. Some other people that were there, Darryl Jeffries from DJ Communications Group, John Y. Woodruff, son of another legendary track legend, Leland Hardy. Wow. One of the great African-American writers of our time, a guy who was outstanding boxer in his own right. Marion Borkin said he's a tremendous writer. He said his writing is a must for all. And as you know, he is also head of security, a financial advisor for the Williams sisters. In fact, he was telling me he was giving Venus some golf lessons not too long ago. And Shaka M. Johnson from Johnson PR Events. We want to thank her and Herb Douglas. And, of course, none other than the legendary Dave Hersher, the disciple from the iconic Joe Goldstein. Those two are sort of legendary figures of media in this city and the world. Tremendous screening. Had a tremendous time there. We want to thank the United Way for their dinner list last Tuesday. Joe Willie Namath was there. Victor Cruz was there. Muhammad Wilkerson got a chance to see Hoopsa. And also, Willie Colon was there. You were saying that the very good chance this is Willie Colon's last year in pro football altogether there, Mr. NFL 401?
I think he has this will probably be his last year, one more year tops, just by the age, you know, and attrition in the NFL and the longevity. I think he could play probably another 3 or 4 years, but as we know, the reality of the National Football League, or the Not For Long League, as some call it.
You're the one that came up with that great tab, NFL, Not For Long.
I mean, it's really a coaches and owners league, if you really look at it, the way it's set up. Totally opposite of Major League Baseball or National Basketball Association. In which that is really a players' league. Those two leagues are baseball and professional basketball, but the NFL is totally different. I mean, anyone can be cut at any time, from Tom Brady to Peyton Manning to if Ray Lewis was still playing. I mean, it's just the way that it's set up, that business.
Yeah, quickly, I want to cut in real quick, talking about the players. Michael Vick. Interesting story. Michael Vick was out someplace a couple of days ago, and someone approached him, got out of hand, making some off remarks about dogs, and security wound up dragging the gentleman away. And Michael was, as you so apropos say, should have been. He was the let the better man in him emerge victorious, as Marion Boykin always said, man be Boykin, black with days of being a brother. And showed that he was the one with the class and character, didn't get down into the gutter with the guy, and security just basically dragged the guy out. But this guy was all in Mike's face, talking about dogs. I mean,
okay, Mike has done whatever payment he was supposed to do, and I think it was beyond what he should have done in the severity of it all. But, I mean, do we continue to attack a human being over animals? I'm not saying what's right or wrong here, but what's that great line by Nelson Mandela? We are our brother's keeper, and our brothers come in all colors. And I just want to mention that. There's a whole other picture we're going to talk about in the collage. Talking about basketball, we got Jump Shot Jonesy, and we got the hoops to hear. Yeah, I got a chance, gentlemen. Doc Stanley Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio, and the Trust and Guardian Network. Remembering Mother's Day. Salute Tony Lobianco. Little Flower Restaurant will be dedicating a dish to the man who played Little Flower on Broadway, a director, award winner, and one of the acclaimed and renowned actors of our generation, Tony Lobianco. And the man can fight, can throw down. Who's the Jump Shot?
Yeah.
I got to see LeBron today as a passer, and he made some passes. And I remember the first time the great Oscar Palmer Robinson. Now, I don't know why. I mean, thank goodness somebody finally made Doug Collins wear a tie there, Hoopster. But I remember Jabbar said the first time he played with Oscar Robinson, he went one way and the ball went the other. And Oscar came back and explained to him why the pass was where it was. And it was because not only was the pass there, but it was in such a position that the defense could not defend it. And LeBron made some passes today that were just really outstanding, that validated, so without question, and we'll start with you, Hoopster, that he is the best player in the game today, Hoopster.
Yes, he is. Also, I got to commend the Indiana Pacers, the way they played today. That was the best time they ever played in two games. When they score over 100 points, they are 9-1. Way of score over 100 points. That was the best game they ever played. They keep that up, the Heat's in trouble. They were making their shots.
90-1.
The
wow.
9-1. They're over 100 points. And that's the first time
they've
been in all time in the games. Yep.
They came alive.
Well, you know what, too, Jump Shot. All of their starting five was in double figures. And
also got to commend Lance Stephenson. He kept his head in the game. Like I was telling y'all before, he keeps his head in the game. He can be dangerous. He played a hell of a game today also. Got to commend him today. The whole team.
Hey, Hoops, did you see a difference physically with Roy Hibbert?
Yes, he did. Yeah, he played this game. Yes, he did.
I mean, from game three, this looks like from game three of round two when they played in Washington. They played in Washington, I was there last week. Hibbert looked lost, but today, I mean, they played like a well-oiled machine. And he's hitting his shots, too.
Yeah, he was down. Once he's down in the paint, he's tough to defend, man. He's tough to defend. So, hey, the Indiana Pacers needed that game won. They were real focused. And plus, everybody played together. No bickering. Everybody played together as a team. That's the way you're supposed to play. So we'll see what happens in game two.
I'm looking at his Jump Shot, and the Clippers are gone. A very controversial call back in KC. But I think the Clippers were in kind of a catch-22 position, Jump Shot. There were people who wanted them to see the win, and there were people who didn't want them to see the win because of the Sterling situation. I think there was an immediate support sort of mode, but at the same time, I think, Jonesy, a lot of people said they didn't want this organization to become a world champion.
Yeah, I think it was kind of on one part where there was a contingent in the country that felt that way, Doc, and then there's another contingent that just wanted to see, you know, these players and this team rise above that and still be, you know, be successful. You know, I think when you're in the playoffs and when you're playing at that level, you're in the playoffs, and it's tough enough trying to win a playoff series when you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing. And what this situation and what all this controversy did, I mean, I think it took off, you know, it took off an edge that this team probably needed to get past, you know, an opponent like Oklahoma City, which is, I mean, you're going up against the MVP, and you need every edge that you can get just being even to even be able to beat this team four times, and they really didn't have that. They fell short, and it's really kind of unfair to the players. You know, it's an act of to me of selfishness. You know, with this owner, in addition to his views and all the stuff and the timing of, you know, all this coming about, and, you know, as we were sharing with young people yesterday, you know, the difference between winning and losing is so small, it's too scary to talk about. And the Clippers just didn't have that. You know, whatever that edge that they needed, you know, this owner and this whole circumstance and this whole situation kind of took it away. Yes, they rallied at times, Doc. They came together at times, but it wasn't enough to really, you know, get over the hump that they, like they may have been able to do.
It's amazing you say that. I'm not in that situation. So I just I just can't believe that once they got on the court, I would have thought getting on the basketball court would have just taken them into a whole other world, and that's just out of the window. I just think they came up short, and I understand the focus and the attention that they got. Was attention sort of negativity, but I think there was a big rally around them. A lot of people were pro, but I just can't. It's like that classic line, and they'll say, "Well, you know, he's a good player, but he's a cancer in the clubhouse." Well, I've never heard clubhouse 2, Yankees 1, and I can't believe that a guy is going to be the type of guy that I'm going to say, "Oh, you know what? I think I'm going to miss the jump shot. But you know what? I'm going to ground out the shortstop." You still, when you put that uniform on, when you got on that, when you get on that floor, when you get on the football, you're still trying to put your best foot forward. And I don't think anybody from a psychological standpoint of view is going to make me do anything but to play at my absolute best. So I don't buy this cancer in the clubhouse stuff. I think they should have been able to, whatever it was, I just can't understand. I mean, because we're living in a society that a lot, you know, what Sterling said was one thing, but I mean, the average African American player is dealing with that every day anyway. So I mean, he's just saying what's on his mind, but the circumstances and the things that evolved in society. I mean, the people kept talking about like Sterling was the head of the Ku Klux Klan. People kept starting to talk like Sterling was the first guy that ever used the word nigger. People act like Sterling was the – I mean, I've said it before. The guy's been 30 years in his business. So we got to look at his contemporaries. I mean, nobody can really seriously tell me as the owner who associated with got that surprise. They know that. I mean, everybody knew I had a girlfriend named Carmen on the side, but now I happen to get caught. And everybody knew that I like to smoke cigarettes in the dugout. So, I mean, I'm just – so I thought it was sort of hypocritical to a certain degree that everybody's like, "Oh, wow, this dude exists. Oh, wow, he's like that." I mean, what could the commissioner have done but what he did? I mean, like, what a great job. What job did he do? Bases loaded. We're down by one run. I'm trying to get a base hit. I'm not trying to ground out the shortstop. I'm trying to get a base hit. I got a base hit. Wow, great job, Dan. Well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to pop up the short left center field that Willie Mays catches it and throw me out. I think maybe – to a lot of degree, that is a crutch for them for not going on. But I just don't see where that validates you. Not, I mean, when I'm out there, what's that great man, Michael Jordan? Supposedly Jackson said there's no I in team. And Mike says, yeah, but there's an I in win. You know, so I think to a certain degree that they're in a good catch-22 position because the rest of, wow, they were heroic and what look at they overcome. It was really tough. But the other hand, they lost. That's the bottom line. They lost. And maybe they're just not as good as a team as we thought. And the thing that I'm saying here, I've said it's for that Blog Talk Radio on the Trust of Garvey Network, I've never seen two guys, Hoopster. I've never seen two guys, Jumpshot Jonesy. I've never seen two guys, Mr. 41, who aged and deteriorated as rapidly and as downhill as Pierce and Garnett. I mean, those guys were horrible this year. I mean, there were some games they had 5 points, 6 points. I mean,
no
there was
points.
One game going there,
no
Mr. Greenfield show. are these Hall of Fame players? And you got the kind of numbers Oscar Robertson was still doing in his last year. Kareem was still getting 20 points a game. Dr. J, I mean, I've never seen two guys, and you guys are my experts. You guys are the guys who know this beyond I do. I've never seen two guys as putrid as they were. I mean, there were games they come out with 5 points. He had 1 point and two rebounds. These are guys who could make a difference. I think Kidd should be saluted. His team was hurt the first half of the year. He did
a
great job. And then I think the guy should be considered as coach of the year. Okay, you give it to the guy down in San Antonio. I mean, that's an easy team to coach. What about the guy in Toronto? What about the guy in Toronto?
I picked him as my coach of the year, by the way.
But, as I talked to my basketball people, and you two said FL401, give that a thought. I'm going to come back here in a minute. I want to go to some of the pictures that we have. Jesse Owens. And I made this talk about Jesse Owens. Jesse Owens was the first athlete, African American ever, to wear Adidas. Adidas ID and the DS, the ID is initials for the first name of the two brothers who put those sneakers together, those shoes together. ID personally went to Jesse Owens in the 1937 Olympics and asked Jesse to wear his shoe. If you notice, you'll see the white shoe. And what happened was that him and his brother broke off. They broke off, and his brother, believe it or not, started producing Puma. And how an incident happened was during a bombing while they were both going into the shelter. Well, one brother's family was in, and as the other brother's family was coming in, the other brother's family said, "Here they come again." The family coming in inadvertently thought they were talking about them coming in the shelter, but they were talking about "here they come again," meaning the bombing. And that caused the rift in the family, and they split. Him and his brother made the sneakers and track shoes right in their own kitchen, in their own kitchen in the oven. And Jesse Owens was the first athlete ever to wear Adidas. And at the same time, we know he had the four gold medals in the 1936 Olympics. Herb Douglas, the documentary, the Renaissance period of the African American, a 22-minute film about the 9 African American Olympians who dominated in track and field during the 1936 Olympics. Now, the great thing about this is what they said is how they proved his Aryan supremacy was not so. But then, we look at it, when they came back to America, bam, it was the same old thing. There was no job for Jesse Owens. The guy had to race horses. So they proved Hitler wrong. But as it turned out, it didn't prove America wrong. And sad thing, people don't look at some of the things that have happened. And, Hank Greenberg approached Babe Ruth's record. Greenberg had 58 home runs. The pitchers wouldn't pitch to him because he was Jewish. Wouldn't pitch to him. Joe DiMaggio got death threats during that 56-game hitting streak. Death threats. Somebody stole Joe's bat. Stole Joe's bat. And in the words of Harold Weston, it's sad and touching. We got to catch it. It's sad and touching. Let's take a quick look at some of the pictures. I have a picture of Isaiah Lord Thomas. What a great, great basketball player. Beyond that, what a great human being. Isaiah stood up and defended Magic Johnson with some of the allegations and the negativity and his uproar by Sterling. And I thought, here was a guy. And I think, if I'm right, it was Magic who said he was the biggest reason why Zeke didn't get on that dream team. I've always thought, how could Magic been his friend and not went to Mike and said, "Mike, hey, Mike, we got to have Zeke on this team." How could Chip Daly not say, "Hey, if I can't have my guy on the team, I'm not going to coach the team." But here he is. And that great line by Dr. King, "Forgiveness is not an occasional act, but a permanent state of mind." And Isaiah is standing up for his friend. And I heard in the comments, he said, when they had a little riff, he said, "He's my friend. Well, we can talk together again." And I'll never forget, Dr. Sanders for the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network, Little Flower Restaurant, saluting the man who played the Little Flower, Tony Lobianco, this Wednesday. I never forget talking to Isaiah because the great sports writer, Clifford Brown from the New York Times, who did so much to bring into prominence the legend of making an inside information on Tiger Woods, as he followed Tiger in the inception of his great career. And he told me that Isaiah called Michael Jordan at home and said, "Mike, you know, hey, I want to be on the team. You know, and Mike said, hey, he had nothing to do with it. I remember in a quiet moment talking to Isaiah Thomas. And I understand Isaiah Thomas was the equal or even the superior all-around standpoint of playing basketball than Mike. He has Mike's one-on-one talent, has Mike's jump shot, and can handle the ball better than Mike, and is a better passer. And I said, Isaiah, you know, I have to really, you know, just salute you, man. I have to take my hat off you, man. You know, I know it went down with this thing when you and Mike, but there's never any negativity when you're doing the games. You're always uplifting, supporting him, bringing all the positivity that can possibly be brought out by it. And Isaiah said something to me that I'll never forget, and he reminded me so much a lot of Michael Jackson. And he said, hey, man, he says, I have to look at myself in the mirror. The great Isaiah Lloyd Thomas.
Speaking of Isaiah Thomas, he might be part owner of the Pistons, looking for ownership for the Detroit Pistons. And I know Stan Gunn Dundee also was named coach and president of the Pistons.
He got the Pistons job. Steve Kerr wind up with the Golden State job.
Can I tell you something? Roberts had something to do with that. Put a bug in his
head. That ain't
common sense. Who would come there? I speak to you and Doc a lot about this. How many guys, whether coach or president, have lived out their total contract working under Dolan? Who has survived there or worked through their total contract working for him, whether in the front office or on the court? And that says a lot. So, you know, why would you come
but
here?
But jump shot, don't you think, I say Sports Net Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. Hold on, I got another call that's coming. I got to get him. I got my 917-312-3724. Who is that lady joining us? And jump shot, though, does this leave sort of a bad taste in Phil Jackson's mouth? I mean, this is the guy that he wanted. This is the guy that he was promoting. This is the guy that he was talking about. And he's spurring him for the job. Do you think this leaves a bad taste in Jackson's mouth? Does this maybe strain their relationship? Or is it just business? Jump shot.
It's partly just business. I'm sure it does leave a bad taste in his mouth. But it raises another interesting dynamic that was mentioned by one of our colleagues on the air, not on our air, but on First Take, which was Mr. Stephen A. Smith of New York City, Queens. And he said that it's interesting how Steve Kerr, with little to no coaching experience, became the prize selection for coaching for coaches during this season. And not only for the Knicks, for the New York Knicks, also his name was mentioned for the Los Angeles Lakers. And then when the Warriors job came about, he became a top candidate for the Warriors. So it's just kind of interesting dynamic how Steve, with little to nothing to bring to the table in terms of actual coaching experience, you know, became a hot prospect with these three openings, two of these openings, and to the two major markets in the country.
LA and New York. Well, I mean, it's sad and touching, Harold Weston would say, but it's not so much that Steve Kerr was the right guy, as it turns out Steve Kerr seems to be the white guy. I mean, it's just amazing that we look at Mark Jackson, who's coming off the second highest win total in the history of the organization, the man who took them to the playoffs back-to-back after a 19-year drought, and his rapport and chemistry with his team has been unmatched since they've had Al Attles. Even Donnie Nelson didn't have the kind of chemistry, and Donnie was a tremendous coach. But
This is one of the questions I wanted to put out to you guys. Who's the jump shot in yourself? Being that this year the Nets, they were knocked out in the second round and eliminated last year in the first round. And with the owner paying nearly $100 million in a luxury tax with the roster that they have, do you guys think that Billy King may be in jeopardy of being cut loose by the team?
Good question. Real quickly, I got the 917-312-3724. Who's that joining us? Okay, I guess they just want to listen in, huh? 917-312-3724. You want to come in? Okay. Before I throw it out to Jump Shot and do Hoops, well, I really quickly, I think King has to be saluted. His team was hurt half of the year. The two guys that he brought in to help the team, Garnett and Pierce, was hurt three quarters of the year. He still made the playoffs, still got out of the first round, and almost. In a game, I don't understand how they came in and lost that game to Atlanta in their own backyard, which could have put they still had a shot to win the division. So I think King has done a tremendous job. The luxury tax is something that the owner reminds me so much of the boss, George Steinbrenner. You know, he's looking to win now. What's that great line of late great George Allen to say? The future is now. So he's got the money, and if he feels that it's what's needed to win. But as far as King, I mean, it's amazing that you mentioned his name, because nobody, until you mentioned it here, Mr. Neville 41, has given him any kudos for a job well done. I mean, he was working with one hand the whole year. He started out the season with a brand new coach. He started the season with guys hurt. He started the season with the two acquisitions that sort of brought the most of his team hurt. Then he had a coaching rebellion there, which Kidd had to make some adjustments. And I salute Jason, because so often it was thought that Frank was there actually coaching the team. So I think Kidd has done a great job. And I think we can start with you, Jump Shot. And I think King did a great job there, Jump Shot. Well, who's the following?
Yeah, I think they definitely did a commendable job. The one thing, as we know, that we followed this game for a long time, it's still a team game. And no matter how much money you spend, trying to put a championship team together, you're going up against the Miami Heat and the best player in the world and LeBron James, and then you have Dwayne Wade, and then you have Chris Bosh, and those are the champions. And I think the one thing with the Nets, I know you mentioned earlier, Doc, about Kevin Garnett. This team, as currently constructed, was not going to contend with Miami, and don't go by the regular season record. Don't believe the hype. This team without Brook Lopez was not going to beat Miami four times in a playoff series.
Jump Shot, you're so on the money. And ladies and gentlemen, I got to give me a minute. This is why I say this is a sports in depth. Not only do we bring you an in depth look at the sports played now and in the future, and also the athletes play that game, but Jump Shot, nobody has said anything about Brook Lopez. And our late beloved friend Mel Smith Jr. always said that Brook was the key to this team. And ironically enough, the Nets are the first team to ever sweep a series and not win in the playoffs. But Jump Shot, two words, Brook Lopez. Great interjection, Jump Shot. Go ahead.
And Doc, I got one more nugget for you as it pertains to the Nets.
Yeah, yeah.
When we talk about Jason Kidd and Darren Williams. And Darren Williams, who is a system guy and did well with the Utah Jazz, was a 2010 guy. But what this team actually needed, if Jason Kidd was able to bring his mentality as a point guard to Darren Williams and actually turn him into a 10-20 guy, which means instead of the 20 points and 10 assists, maybe the 10 to 15 points and 20 assists, something along the lines of what Chris Paul, does with the Clippers, maybe this team, you would involve more players in terms of getting scoring. I know Joe Johnson really played a great series against Miami, but, the distribution of putting of 15 to 20 assists a night and involving more players, in the scoring could help the Nets. You know, that's just a thought. And that was a Jason Kidd mentality, and that's part of what made him or will make him a future Hall of Famer. He was Mr. Triple-Double for a long time. He was rebounding. He was assist. And it didn't matter. Many times Jason Kidd did not score 20 points in a basketball game, but he got so many other players on the floor involved. And he can, unfortunately, being a rookie coach, you're not going to be able to transfer that to someone like a Darren Williams. And that's not a knock on Darren Williams. Darren Williams is who he is.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it's a tremendous point. I mean, your kid, I remember his first year here, and Tim Duncan won the MVP award. In fact, I wrote a poem and gave it to Jason. It was a foregone conclusion that Jason Kidd was MVP of the league, and Tim Duncan got it. And you're right, there were games where Jason Kidd had zero or 2 points, but he had the 13 assists and the 10 rebounds. And you're right. And a guy like Jason Kidd, like a guy like Bill Russell, I mean, you love playing with him because, you know, I mean, he's getting you the ball. I mean, he's not worried about shooting. I mean, you're able to get your shots. You know, don't worry about it, Doc. Keep shooting, baby. And you love to play with a guy like that. At the same time, if push comes to shove, you have no problem getting the ball to him or going in the direction he tells you to go because you know that his whole focus is about the W-I-N-I-N-G. The great Oscar Palmer Robinson once told me that when he joined the Bucks, he had to work with Greg Smith. He said, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And to show you the measure of how Oscar Robinson was, the people don't understand how great he was. And I said, he's the greatest player ever played. And you have to, it's two stats that blow, there's three stats that blow your mind. First of all, Walt Frazier said, if Oscar Robinson was so himself, he could have scoring records that had never been broken. Here's the measure of Oscar Robinson. Oscar Robinson came out of college, the greatest collegiate scorer in the history of the game. 33 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 assists. For all intents and purposes, he did a triple-double from the forward spot because they didn't count as if they do now. But he's the greatest scorer in the history of collegiate basketball. Okay, scored 56 points his first game in Madison Square Garden, which was more points than the whole opposition team scored altogether. Yeah, scored them by himself. Okay, and what does this guy do his first year in the NBA? What stat does Oscar Robinson lead the NBA in? He's the greatest scorer in the history of collegiate basketball. 33 points a game, a member of the 2020 club. What stat does Oscar Robinson lead the NBA in his first year? Is it points? No. Is it free throws made? No. It was assists. What can you say? And when he retired from basketball, Oscar Robinson was the second highest scorer in the history of the game, and he was number one in assists. A staggering thought about a remarkable and just, you know, he's untouchable player in the history of this game. There'll never anybody to play this game like Bailey's little brother, Devon's husband, and Tia's dad. The great, the one and only Oscar Palmer Robinson. Okay, so some thoughts here as we're looking we're talking about the kid, the Nets. I thought Hoopster, I felt, and maybe it makes me look pretty good, I felt that both Garnett and Pierce would be better in L.A. The weather,
period.
Doc Rivers, they wouldn't be as I spoke to one of the cameramen on the Mike Belly's great show on Big Cat Sports, they wouldn't have been leaned on as much, and they would have been great for a half-court game. I think L.A. missed them, and I think they would have been a lot better. I don't know if they would have been as hurt, but I feel they would have been a lot more advantageous being with Doc Rivers and out in L.A. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think they would have been better off in L.A. But pretty well what Jones said about Darren Williams. Also, you know he's going to need surgery on that ankles. He had bad ankles. And years ago, I was telling you on the show before, with Grant Hill was wearing on felines. And they hurt
really?
Him and messed up his ankles.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Really?
Yeah, Darren Williams. Darren Williams got bad ankles.
Okay, once again, ladies and gentlemen, what a revelation. What is it about the felines? It's amazing you say that. Dr. Darren Sports in the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Driving Network. My beloved daughter Demi, my greatest asset outside of the good Lord and the love of my life, she used to love felines. And I remember Grant, he ordered a couple of, in fact, he ordered a pair of felines for me. And I remember the problems he had in Detroit, and you're right, his career was never the same with that. But what is it with felines that they cause this problem with the ankles, Hoopster?
Probably something inside the shoe. They probably wasn't made right. fight with the cushion of the shoe.
That's amazing. And you talk about that shoe story. Let's go back to one more time here. Going to our photo catalog, there's some pictures of mothers. You know, last week was Mother's Day, and we didn't do a Mother's Day show. But real quickly, the picture of my mother, my sister Helen, my little Elfie, Rosie from the must be our music set up there. Okay, Rosie from Fortaleza, Monica from Fortaleza, Rosie from Rio de Janeiro, my afiada, and my, both my afiadas, my goddaughter, and my lady who I was the best man at their wedding, Nell, and I call her Smoochie G. There's a picture of her. We also have a photo of Barbara Walters, 85 years old, who was great, one of the great journalists, sportscasters, one of the pioneers, opened a lot of doors for a lot of ladies. She retired this year off The View. But Barbara said, hey, you know, not saying goodbye, just saying, you know, hold tight, you know what I mean? So we have a picture of her. I don't know if she's a mother or not, but like I said, a picture of my mother, my sister, Elkie, a picture of Monica, a picture of Rosie. Also, I have some other pictures there. I didn't give my mother's greetings from my friend out in France, but my brother said something today, too, that was really profound. He said, you know, every day is Mother's Day. And including both Stonesy and had great mothers in the past. Ladies, I want to apologize, but I don't know what is the problem with our studio music and playing the music, maybe in that particular cut. We'll see what happens later on. Apologize for that, but we just want to salute all the mothers out there. And speaking about sneakers, jump shot. I think that you're right. I will do that jump shot. 10-4, thanks a lot for that. But speaking about sneakers, you know, Michael Jordan did not want to go to Nike. Maybe that may have been a problem. Michael was reluctant to go to Nike. And, you're right there, Jonesy. Tremendous. His parents told him, look, this is all the mothers in the world every day. There's your cousin, Marcia Jr., your beloved mother in San Paulo. Fernanda's mother in Port Alegre. Mike didn't want to go with Nike. And his parents told him, look, this is what they got to say. And Mike went to Nike. And then he went to Adidas. And so Adidas, look, this is what Nike has offered me. Yeah, he said, I'm not going to say, I want to go with you guys. Do you have an offer? Adidas didn't want to even make an offer. And Magic Johnson had told Converse, you used to have a sneaker called Docs. And Converse made they responded with, well, we don't think a player can sell sneakers. And that's funny because I remember me and Julius, as a lot of you know, when I say Julius, I'm talking about Julius Erving. When I say Eddie, I'm talking about Eddie Murray. And as you know, Julius is, and him and his wife, his former Turquoise are the godparents of my first two kids. My daughter Turquoise is named after. In fact, Turquoise ironically named both of my kids because as soon as Melvin was born, she started calling him Little Mel. And to this day, we still call him Little Mel. And we were up out somewhere, and a gentleman came over and said hi to Julius, and he sat down. And he sat down and talked to Julius a while, and he got up and he left. And when he left, Julius said, Mel, a Converse just paid for our dinner. And you would have thought this was the Julius Erving infiltration of the ABA, elevating to the status. I thought he was, without question, the equal or the superior to Michael Jordan. And I was just stunned that Converse wouldn't have thought that Julius Erving, of all people, could sell the sneaker. And,
That was my first pair, Doc.
There's the thing, and you call him Chuck Taylor. That was the name right there, Chuck Taylor. I remember back in the day, it's amazing. Converse would cost you about $7, $7, $8, which is as much as you were paying for shoes in the 60s and 70s. So, and I remember I used to run out of sneakers, man. I mean, I remember playing stickball in the street. I'd run into second base and have one sneaker on and one sneaker off. Or the tongue would be out. I mean, when I brought the Converses, after 2 weeks, my mother still saw me the sneakers. I see the exact moment now. She looked at she said, you still got the sneakers? She said, you buy the sneakers all the time. And there was only, the only two brands you had was Converse, and you had Spalding. And there was reluctance to and Pro Kids, that's right. And there was a reluctance to wear.
Jojo White. Dream on Juju Bar wore Pro Kids.
Really?
Milwaukee Bucks. Yes, he has.
Really?
Nate Archibald, Jojo White, Bob Love.
Nate Archibald,
right.
Yep.
The green,
wow,
green
White,
suede blue high top, Pro Kids, Tiny Archibald.
And I remember Tiny, because I asked Tiny for a pair of sneakers one time for my collection here, and he said, Mel, he said, Pro Kids, when I need another pair of sneakers, they bring them to me, take the old pair. So I remember I asked Julius for a pair one time, and Julius said, go ahead and get a pair out of the room over there. And I was stunned that there's about 8 or 9 pair of sneakers. So I think everybody was under the mindset that athletes were things like we did, but not realizing the demands and the wear and tear on the sneakers. Isaiah Thomas told me he could not wear a pair of sneakers every game. Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley, Michael Jeffrey Jordan wore a new pair of sneakers every single game. Doc Stanley, Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Give us just a minute as we continue to remember those wonderful ladies in our life. Stop. Maybe that's just that particular cut. Tony, Lobianco, Wednesday, it's Ludus, a dish, a little flower so restaurant, named the set, that's the man who played the little flower, Little LaGuardia, the most renowned, most famous man in history of the city,
I'll say it
and we will take some time out,
I'll
and the man who's beyond just a famous actor, both on Broadway and off Broadway, but a writer, director, and producer. And you know, he's won a couple awards there. One was for that, The View from the Bridge. Also, the Oscar Award. So we take our hats off to Tony. See what they say. I just want to say congratulations. And more than well deserved. Dr. Sally Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio, and the Trusted Guard Radio Network. And with that, we're going to jump back into Jeff Shack and Hoopsin. I'm going to have some
better
stuff going on here. I want to get back to that collage for you real quick.
Hey, Doc, can I say something?
Go ahead,
Hoopsin. Yeah, I just wanted to listen out to the female ball players and Jump Shot, the females out there. I just want to let everybody, the ladies, know that the Liberty are back at the Garden, so they could go see them at the Garden after 3 years.
How long have they been gone, Hoopsin? 2 years?
Three years.
Oh, my goodness, that's amazing.
And they're back at the Garden, so all my female ball players and Jump Shot females out there, they could go see the Libby back at Madison Square Garden, so they could go see them.
You know what's amazing? You mentioned that, Hoops, so Doc Stanley Sports Net, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. A salute to both the man who played the Little Flower and the Little Flower Restaurant. We'll be there this Wednesday. Salute to Tony Lobianco. You know what's amazing? is that, and you were there. You were on the ground floor, and the WNBA came in. And I'm saying this not because not because he's the greatest African sportscaster in history of this city, who makes him the greatest of all time. Satirically, Larry Hardesty was the guy that put the WNBA on the map, and he did it with Bill Lederman, who was such an integral part of that, and Mickey Mantle. And I remember, and we took our hats off to Don King last week with the Stinnett winning the WBA Heavyweight Championship of the World. Don gave me a call this week. Don's funny. I called Don. I text Don to simply say congratulations, and I hear there's a voice message on my phone. The Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Call me, Stanley. Call me, my brother. And it was Don. And the thing about Don, he's a guy who is the greatest promoter in the history of this sport and the adversity that he constantly has to deal. I worked with Don. Don called me in. He knew I was a police officer. I was still active then, and he asked me to come work with Tony Tucker. And I'm just telling you, if Don told you to be someplace at 5 o'clock, he was there at 4. And my money was always there, okay? And talking to Eric Gilfin, one of the top PR men in the history of Madison Square Garden, and I asked Eric, how to work with Don King? He said, Don King and his people are the best. They're professional, they run the money, they are the best to work with, the most efficient, and easy to work with. And Don said he'll be in town in a few days, but became the first Haitian to ever win heavyweight championship of the world. Don called me back. And the thing about Don always says, only in America, the greatest country in the world. I said, I'll ever forget it. And we take this moment to salute the greatest promoter ever lived. And Oscar De La Hoya, at the press conference the week before last, said that it was Don King who was the pioneer of the great main event with a tremendous undercard. Don King. Only in America. And Don is a guy that just and historically, Don has a problem. He wants it eliminated from the Constitution, the three-fifths element of the compromise, which says that African-Americans are three-fifths of a human being. He made a movement for that. And I remember I told you he was at a press conference. He talked about Supreme Court Justice Roger Bruce Stanley, who basically said a black man has no rights. The way men have to respect. Don, I was at the United Way Dinner this Tuesday. Joe Namath, Henry Barnes, Victor Cruz, Willie Colon, Muhammad Wilkerson, the great Richard Castor, as Barnes too. Henry Barnes and a lovely wife. We're going to have them on the show too. And he said, you know, Don's done a lot of things for a lot of people. He doesn't say anything about it. However, the great Howard, the dean of American sports writers, the sports of the iconic. And there's a great Howie Evans. And Howie has generally told me about stories where Don has done things and paid people's bills and hospital things, and that's the word. Well, that's what it's about. I mean, Christ always used to say, hey, miracle he did, hey, don't say anything about it. And there's no equation at all. But it's just how you do things. There's a great line that says, you know, you try to find somebody that you can do something for, there's no way in the world they can pay it back. The guy you walk along the street and you give him a $10 bill, there's no way in the world he can pay it back. It always comes back to you. It's just, but Don King has been, Destino Lois, our own Destino H.R. Brown Lois, talked about how happy he was to see Don back on the scene. And Don has been missed. I remember the press conference at Madison Square Garden for the Mark Martinez and Cotto fight, and they didn't have a bottle of water for the media. Not even a bottle of water. This is the iconic Madison Square Garden. This is top rank, one of the legendary promotions of boxing. And it was just amazing. I mean, the late great John Francis Xavier Condon I couldn't believe it. I mean, there wasn't a bottle of water. Don gives you a press conference unlike any other, with a combination of entertainment and how he feeds the media is unparalleled. And he's got his champion. He says he's going to be coming to New York pretty soon. And Don talks about Don's impact on the game from a plus and a minus factor. It's just a plus factor. Nobody made your head to sign with Don. I remember when Don first joined Madison Square Garden, and that's when Sonny Werblin was still there. And I remember they had a big press conference out at a country club upstate. And I remember both Richard Cicchetti and Jerry Corey said something that I'll never forget. Jerry Corey said, Don King is the first guy who ever promised me X amount of money, and I got it. Okay? That's what Jerry Corey said, and that's what Richard Cicchetti, who was a trainer, as I've been the trainer of the great Barry Holmes. They both said, Don King is the first guy to ever promise me X amount of money, and I got it. And Don, man, like I said, I call him Happy Days Are Here Again. And as you know, next month, it's Cotto and Martez at Madison Square Garden. And then we've got a couple other things happening, too. It's a fight last night that Dusty wasn't around. Wish you could give us the insight on that. And we have at the Barclays Center, Oscar De La Hoya has his main event fighter in a fight that's going to be a thriller. July 12th, MGM Grand in Las Vegas. Canelo Alvarez against American Dream, Laura. That's going to be a tremendous fight. Two outstanding young talents, two of the elite young fighters in the game today, and that should be a heck of a card. And we're looking for someone online with the Pretty Boy, the Money Man. Mayweather should be announcing pretty soon what's going to happen as he's got a fight coming up September. Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley. We just got to wonder what's going to happen with both of them. Getting back to our photo. Joe Namath was at United Way dinner. We're going to thank all their PR people there, too. And Joe basically, Mr. Neville 401, said, if he's healthy, okay, if he's healthy, Michael Vick should be the starting quarterback for the New York Jets. Mr. Neville 401?
I have to agree with Broadway Joe. As expected, that he will, let's take a look at it. He's the more seasoned, more complete quarterback out of the two. It's just bad timing there with Geno coming off of a rookie year, having gotten hot the last, you know, couple of games of the season. But before I get into that, I just want to reach out on behalf of the Sports and Death Nation and the distinguished host, Doc Stanley, and the other co-hosts. We want to reach out and give our deepest condolences to the family of Atlanta Falcons wide receiver Roddy White on the passing of his brother, Tyrone Moore, 21, who was shot early Saturday morning outside of a Charleston, South Carolina club after a dispute. So we offer our deepest condolences out to Roddy White and his family on the loss of his brother there.
Wings, we want to thank you so much. You're always on the money with that. Your alertness, not only to what's on the grid on the field, but what's off of them. These are the things that you and Mel, these are the things that make this show, and would do other than somebody, and it's just posse. It's just cruel people, Lady A, and the hoops to jump shot, Dusty, Muscles, tremendous, tremendous cruel people, and thanks so much. And continue.
But I think that Michael Vick will be the starter, not to have Geno Smith panic, because as we know, history shows that Michael Vick cannot complete a full season as of the last couple of years, just due to the battle scars and injuries over the years that he suffered in Atlanta. I mean, he was very mobile. He really brought that excitement to the NFL when he played for Atlanta Falcons, but he took a tremendous beating on his body, and it's just catching up with them, married with Father Time. So I do expect Michael Vick to be a starting quarterback, but for how long is the question that has to be asked, and it's probably being asked not only in our realm of the media, but also with the fans there. On whether he can complete a whole season, because remember when we covered the Jet game, the Giants game last year with the Giants in Philly, that was the game that he was injured going out on the Giants side of the ball, running out of bounds. He blew his hamstring out there as well. So, but getting back to the Jets, Just looking over the first five draft picks, that being Calvin Pryor, the top one out of the Louisville Cardinals. The Jets did make a couple of good picks in the first four rounds, just pulling Calvin Pryor, who I may say got a lot of accolades from the coach, Rex Ryan.
And me.
Because this well, absolutely. and I have to take it back to Hoopster there when we were, monitoring the draft. He was telling me that he expected his team that he so dearly loves, the Pittsburgh Steelers, to get Calvin Pryor. And when the Jets were able to draft him, I thought I was going to have to get the defibrillator out and restart the Hoopster's heart.
pump. So we did good in the draft, too.
The Jets plugged a lot of holes. They addressed a lot of the holes in the first four rounds with Calvin Pryor. 2012 season amassed 100 tackles, 5 forced fumbles, 1 forced fumble recovery. 2012 season, 2013, he amassed 75 tackles and 2 forced fumbles, which he's a hard-hitting safety, free safety, which is what the Jets are going to need in the backfield there. When you go down to their second pick, the second round, 17th draft pick, Jay Samaro out of the Texas Tech Red Raiders out of the Big 12. He had a pretty
sleeper pick.
Great 2013 season, 106 receptions for 1,352 yards and 7 touchdowns in a career of 138 receptions, 1,800 yards, and 13 career touchdowns. So the Jets, they did pretty well in free agency. They did pretty well in the draft. Even though I don't believe in just the way things are set up, the 12 picks, not all of them are going to make the team. It's just not going to happen. It's not practical.
Has that ever happened that all the picks made the team, though? And Jumpshot, I want you to, because I know you, there's a lot of Jet in you. Has that ever happened where all the picks made the team, or is just a situation that it's just not going to happen? Everybody's not going to make the team that's in Vail 4-1?
No, it's just not going to happen. I mean, when you're starting off with over 90 guys, and as the season goes through, guys are...
You got 53.
You got to get it down to the roster plus 53, the... 53,
right? like a
count. 56, yeah, and then you got the practice squad. So, it's the nature of the National Football League. I mean, you're very expendable, But, I mean, the Jets, I give them a A-minus at this point. As Randy Lang, the editor-in-chief of Jets media department online and different things like that, he put it when a lot of these guys were big fish in the college pond, but right now there's more fish in the NFL pond because, that's just the way it is. So it's a matter of how these guys are going to produce on the field, longevity. You got these rookies, but I think Calvin Pryor, they did very well with that. He's definitely a standout. And with the wide receivers from Oklahoma, Sooners and Dexter McDougal out of Maryland, you put their careers combined, it's well over 330 receptions and over 5,000 reception yards for their combined, that's a correction for Oklahoma and UCLA, Shaq Evans and Jalen Saunders. Saunders being out of Oklahoma and Shaq Evans out of UCLA. Over 330 receptions for over 5,000 yards and a combined of 40 touchdowns. So, they're going to have some struggles. I mean, this weekend was the mini camp. 24 NFL teams opened up a rookie mini camp, which the teams are allowed to have a mini camp. One of the first two weekends directly after the draft, the Giants didn't participate in the mini camp. A couple of teams didn't, but the Giants, that being a New York team, didn't participate this week.
Right.
In the mini camp. So look out for the Jets. I think if they stay healthy.
Real quick, we got you going on. Shumshad, you got some Jet in you.
I wanted to
have a Jet
time then. On the question of Vic versus Smith at the quarterback position,
right.
I think even with the Jet draft, you know, they did well draft wise. I think unfortunately though, because of the division that they're in, not so much whether you pick Vic or whether you pick Smith, but it's what they didn't do, and what they didn't do was get Darrell Revis back on their team, or at least away from New England. The free agent picks that New England got and still having to go up against Tom Brady twice a year, you know, unfortunately, because of the division that they're in, you know, unless you can go 6-1 or 5-2 in the AFC East, it's going to prevent you from winning 10 games because now you got to go 5-4 against the rest of the league. And if you can't go 10-6 and win a division and get that first round bye, you probably won't get to the AFC Championship game, or if you get to the AFC Championship game, you won't get it at home. So
absolutely not as a wild card.
There's still – now, when these younger players – when this draft develops, and we don't know what kind of season Revis is going to have, and he actually may be a free agent again next year, you know, then they may be able to make some headway in a division. So sometimes it's not a question of whether it's Vic or Smith.
Gentlemen, hold on. Let's stay with Revis. That's a tremendous point. And the young lady, what's our female journalist, Wings, the young lady we always talk about for Newsday?
Kimberly Martin from
Newsday. I saw her, and I said, a couple of things, and I'm with you. And I said, well, looking at the Jets, were you surprised that they didn't go after Revis? She said, no. She said she felt that the bad blood was just too bad. She said, but she was surprised that they didn't get Cromartie back. I said, well, but what about the aspect of not letting Revis go to New England? And she said, well, okay. And now she gave it a thought. I mean, I remember Whitey Herzog took a shortstop and got him just so the Mets couldn't get him. And I just thought from a money standpoint of view, and we're talking about money now, I didn't understand the attempt not to get Revis back, but even more so, gentlemen, the failure to get Cromartie back. Now, she talked about his injury problem, but still, Cromartie was willing to, one, take less money, and two, he knows your system. And I think that plays a big part in anything you're trying to do. When you get somebody that knows your system, that's just, I think it's a big plus, gentlemen.
Big plus.
I mean, well, when you look at Revis, I mean, he is getting up in the age. He had the injury. He's kind of bouncing around like
yo-yo.
Yeah, I mean, have to look like Deion Sanders. I mean, Deion Sanders kind of bounced around a little bit there too as well. But you know, we're talking about. Yeah, I mean,
29 going toward 30. He's still a shutdown. He's still a partially, not like he was years ago. He's still a shutdown corner. The thing is, he's not on their roster.
But the thing
they lost Cromartie when it was
advantageous and when I mentioned that the differences of amongst the big three leagues, professional sports leagues in the country, he unfortunately happens to be in a coach owner fueled league. I mean, it's not like baseball. It's not like basketball. I mean, it's just he wanted to get the bigger bang for his buck. And like, I have to agree with Kim, it's a lot of bad blood there. I mean, Revis was he had the advantage the first time because you had a lot of new guys to the team, you know, with Cremonti and these guys. They had to learn the system. So the Jets were kind of, you know, he was the best at that time, and there was no one that close to Revis. I mean, he was the best in the game for at least a couple more years to come. And the second holdout, you know, the advantage wasn't on Revis' side, so it was advantageous for the Jets at that point to cut him because they knew this upcoming draft. Because you have to understand, at that time, they had a lot of cap problems.
Yeah.
They had a lot of – so they couldn't spend a lot of money anyway. And with that injury, they didn't know whether he was going to come back. So you have to look at it from the business aspect as well.
Right. No, I agree with you. I understand the origin of it, and he did agitate Jet management. You know, my point is he, you know, in terms of upgrading, you haven't upgraded yet. Now, he's been away 2 years now. It'll be 2 years. You still haven't upgraded those corners.
Tremendous point, Jonesy. Tremendous point, Jonesy.
You're facing a guy who knows how to get to the AFC Championship game, which is Tom Brady. And the Belichick-Brady formula is they're going to go 5-2 or 6-1 just in the division. Nobody's contending or competing with them within the division, which means all they do is they'll go 5-4 or maybe 6-3 outside the division, and they'll end up 11-5.
Also look at it as well that the Jets, they also struggled when they did have them on there against New England. So they didn't win so many different games when they went up against New England, even when they had Revis on there, just for the fact of the talent they had up in New England and the quarterback and the coach. So the only time that Brady and Belichick in New England didn't win the division is when he got hurt. That was the only time he didn't win under that regime. So it goes beyond Revis. It also goes with the quarterback.
I think at the time we had Revis hurt. Let's real quick. Pittsburgh is not with us, but how are things looking for you guys there in Pittsburgh, there, Hoopster? I mean, I know deep down inside you're perpetrating the fact that you're all basketball. But what's happening with Pittsburgh? You still got your coach there.
We did good in the draft. I'll give him an A+. We did pretty good in the draft. We got the guy from Ohio State, the linebacker. We got some more defense and a little more offense. We're going to be all right. We're going to be all right.
Which they do come back to MetLife this year again, two years in a row.
Don't get thrown out the game, okay?
I still think that the Jets have a better chance of making the postseason than I believe the Giants. The Giants are, it's sort
really?
Of with the New York teams, upside down, reversal of a, they have a lot of holes to fill. They are where the Jets were 2 years ago. Eli Manning, how is he going to come back?
The Giants did well too now.
But now the thing about draft, the guys have to perform. But Doc Stanley Sports
and
Block and Radio
and
the Trust Driving Network. But here's the thing: how much? And I remember talking to the great Jerry Reese, the GM and first vice president of the Giants, and I said, and he told me you have to understand there are certain obstacles that are put in your way once you win a Super Bowl, and which makes it so amazing that teams can do it. And you took a Jets with the Giants two times in a four-year period. And he said that there are obstacles that are put in your way and things you're not allowed to do. You're talking about them not being as improving or bettering themselves. How much of that do we put on Reese, and how much of that do we put on those obstacles that he said that are impeding your way to rise above? And then how big of a question is Eli Manning. Jerry seems to think it's just, and I said that all last year, that I thought he was injured. And I think if he's not injured, he's going to be 100% better than last year.
Yeah.
Wings?
I mean, you look at the injury that he sustained to his ankle in that game late in the season, towards the end of the season. And you look at Hakeem Nicks, basically didn't produce last year. You really have Victor Cruz, and you had an offensive line that was in shambles. So it's a combination of both with the collective bargaining agreement, with salary caps, different things like that, injuries, attrition. So it was a combination, and the Giants are a team always at this point is going to be the number one team in New York, just like the Yankees over the Mets. But they're going through a transition at this point. They're running back. You know, he had that neck injury. There's a question on whether he's going to come back 100%. So there are a lot of, you know, even on the defensive side, they lost a lot of leaders. Is JPP ever going to bounce back from that back injury, back surgery? There are a lot of questions and there are a lot of holes that they had to fill. And it's a matter of are the people, who's going to make the team, who's not, who's going to stay healthy, because these guys in training camp, they take a beating even before the preseason starts, before the season starts. These guys are beat up.
You just interjected a very, very good question. A very good question. And it's a question that gets asked in a very invisible manner, and I'm shooting it at you, jump shot, I'm shooting it at you, hoopster. Is JPP possibly done? I mean, do you ever really come back from a back injury, hoopster?
No. That's hard to do. Plus, you're on your four-corner stance. You're always down on you, try to get the quarterback. That's going to be real tough. Really tough. Well,
Does
we never know.
Has he reached 30 yet? 30 years old?
I don't believe so. He's close to,
I think he's like
27, 28. He's up there. I don't know the exact age, but even I think even a young guy would have a problem with back injuries the same way that quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, you look in Major League Baseball. They're having problems. The Bud Selig is worried about the amount of pitches that are having to undergo Tommy John surgery. So,
that's amazing to me, because that's amazing to me. Doc Stanley for the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. It's the Hoopster, Jemshad Jonesy, Ms. NFL 411 with the Doxter. We are saluting Tony Lobianco. Little Flower Restaurant is this Wednesday. And my man Tinzo is down there. They're going to be saluting. Tony is going to be honored. Tinzo, the manager there, he's going to be honored with his own own spaghetti dish. As you know, Tony is an award-winning director, producer, and writer. He's also one of the iconic actors of our generation. In the Oscar-winning film, Gene Hackman won the best Oscar, male-wise, for that, and he, best picture, has also been in A View from the Bridge, another award winner for him.
I'll tell you what's amazing. In 2014, I guess the complete game must be obsolete. I don't ever
This is what befuddles me. You're pitching every 5 days. I remember asking the great George Thomas Seaver, and I didn't understand how great George Seaver was. George Thomas Seaver, until I spoke to some people and I saw him and I met him, and I told Seaver one time, I said, wow, you know, if he was around there, you'd win 500 games. mean he pitched seven and the Reeves come in. And people, I think people understand how great – I think people started to see how great Mariano was to the Yankees. And Steve was telling me bullshit. He said you got to go every 4 days and you got to go seven innings. Now, which is referring to me is you're only pitching every 5 days. And there's sometimes – that sometimes you will pitch only five innings, depending on the pitch count. How are they hurting their arms, gentlemen? How are they hurting their arms? You're pitching every 5 days, you're under a pitch count, and you're getting hurt. There's something wrong with this pitcher, which means maybe we better go back to the way it was. But hoopster, jump shot, wings, how are you hurting your arm? And you're being baby. I remember the great line Johnny Unitas had about quarterbacks today. He said they treat quarterbacks like they got skirts on. They're treating these guys like they're making the most amount of money. They're doing the less amount of work. They're pitching every five. Oh, wait a minute. Jump shot. Oh, man, jump shot. He's got a 3-0 lead. It's the fifth inning. But he's through 97 pitches. I got to think about the game.
They take guys out who are pitching a no-hitter. They're pitching a shutout and a no-hitter, and they'll take him out of the game.
It's not a combination of early injuries and in pitches being overpitched due to injuries.
Not really, Wayne, because they're babying them in the minor leagues. I mean, I could understand. If you come out of the minor leagues, they're baby. And listen, they're doing it in the little league. Little Tommy Johnson can't pitch every Saturday. When I was a kid, the guy pitched every Saturday. Little Tommy Johnson can't pitch every Saturday. So now you bathe him in the little league, okay. Now he gets to the next league. He gets to the minor league. I think that's where it begins. I mean, how can you pitch every five? And the old – Gene Mock said he saw the great Sandy Koufax, and today they said his autograph – jacket of his for the Dodgers went for $267,000. Babe Ruth's watch went for $650,000. Gene Mock said he saw Sandy Koufax warming up on the sideline. Warming up on it, he said he saw Koufax throw 131 warm-up pitches. He said he was looking for something. And Mock said he saw Koufax's expression of his face. Koufax found it. Let me tell you what, he damn sure found it. He went out through a perfect game no-hitter against the Phillies. Juan Marichal told me, the greatest right-handed pitcher of his era and my favorite right-handed pitcher of all time, he told me, and I'll never forget this game, Marichal spawn, sitting Bob Murphy, the late, great Bob Murphy. Nobody said Vincent Coleman. And let's go around the scoreboard. In Milwaukee, in San Francisco, it's the Giants and the Braves. Nothing. End of five. Spawn and Marichal. It's the ninth inning now. Spawn and Marichal are sending nothing. They're in the 12th inning now. Spawn and Marichal sending nothing. Hey, it's all over in San Francisco. In the bottom of the 16th inning, Willie Mays just hit a home run. The Giants beat the Braves 1-0. Juan Marichal told me that game. He threw 247 pitches. 247 pitches. And we're not counting the 8 warm-up pitches for every inning. He threw 247. That means him and Spawn together had to throw close to 500 pitches. I mean, if he threw 247, I figure Spawn threw over 200. So they threw almost. I mean, close to 500.
And plus they had a bat too, right, Doc?
247. And so, I mean, my thinking is, how does this happen? You pitch every fifth day. You pitch on Monday, and I go see you again to Sunday. And understand, you threw 97 pitches a day. Okay? So here
and
you are.
And you have a personal trainer.
Yeah.
You have a personal trainer.
But now you... Jonesy, you talking about guys on a no? I remember somebody was throwing a no hitter, and the manager was contemplating taking a ride. I remember Preston Gomez. I met Preston Gomez. We were sitting in the press box together at Shea Stadium when it was still Shea. He said, "Well, everybody know Willie Mays, the greatest ever play." And I remember Preston Gomez took a guy out of the game Okay, this is the last place. This is the last place. San Diego Padres. He took this guy out of the game who was throwing a no-hitter. The kid was throwing a no-hitter, and this was the last. The Padres were in last place. They were going nowhere because they were already where they were going. That was in the cellar. The boy was throwing a no-hitter. He took him out. He pinch hit for him. That reminds me of the story. We got to get Lefty Gomez's Veronica Gomez on his daughter. We also try to get Jim Bouton here, and along also with Harvey Farmer. Got to get him back. And her book, she gave me a book about her father. Joe DiMaggio, on September the 9th, was hitting .409. He had some eye problems, and Joe McCarthy would not sit him down. He would hit 400. He's .385, but he would not sit him down. And it, I don't know the mindset of some of these people, these men, but gentlemen, how can you be having these Tommy John surgeries when you're pitching every fifth day and you're not throwing more than 100 pitches? And I think the question is answered in the fact of Nolan Ryan at Texas. Nolan Ryan didn't believe in that pitch count nonsense and didn't believe in that taking out after a certain amount of time. And if Texas had been pretty successful, and I think it's about the strength of the arm. Tom Seaver told me you got to pitch every 4 days, and you got to go at least 7 innings. And I think that's wrong with the arms. They're babying them. They're willing to give them this astronomical amount of money. But I mean, what's this guy? Cole's got the big money. What's he done? I mean, these guys ain't winning. They're not even winning 11, 10 games a year. They're not winning 11, 10 games a year. I mean, I saw an ERA today of 6. How could you step on a major league mound with an ERA over 4? This guy, one had ERA 5 points something. The other guy was 6 points something. How could you step? There are women in the softball league pitch better than that. Women in the softball league pitch.
A CP can't pitch.
What would they pay Bob Gibson? It's 1968. He was 22-9. And of the 9 games he lost, he probably could have won 30 games. Out of the 9 games, about 6 or 7 of them, he lost either 1-0 or 2-1. Had a 1.12 earned run average.
Well, what's that boy named from Detroit? He won 30 games, right? Danny McClain, right?
14 complete games.
Well, McClain, I never tell you about complete games. I mean, you know, you talk about that 5-year period, Colfax averaged 27 wins, 300 strikeouts, but 20 complete. Marichal back-to-back years of 27 complete games. When Marichal retired from baseball, he won 243 games. He had 244 complete games. 244 complete games. And I just told you about the one against Bond. 16 innings. They don't make them like they used to.
Those are power pitches.
No one on the major league roster that will complete probably 5 games this year.
And Jones, a tremendous point. I remember they say, I remember they talked about this guy, Doc Holliday. They said, he led the league last year. He had 8 complete games. Marichal, Colfax, Marichal, Gibson, Colfax, Drysdale, Jim Maloney, Warren Spahn. They had 10 complete games by the All-Star game. I remember Jim Catfish told me something. I'll never forget. Jim Catfish told me something. We were at Mickey Mantle's, and they had this affair. Doc Stanley's posted their blog talk radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. We want to thank you so much for being with us. Jump Shot Jonesy is here. The Hoopster, Lewis Hart, and Cincinnati Sea Wings, Cedric Graham is there for when they're all here. We once again going to try a little bit of Always Love My Mama. The complete guy. You said something, Jonesy, that we have to understand that what's going to happen now. We are never, understand this, we are never ever going to see another 300-game winner in the history of baseball. Never. Any VR. And now it has become hard for guys to win 20 games. And maybe the Yankees, somebody said that Mario Rivera may be the greatest MVP of all time. Because, I mean, now we have his jump shot Jones. Luckily enough, it's a sixth inning, and you only threw 87 pitches. So you go to the seventh inning, and you got a 3-1 win. Okay? Now, they take you out. You win 3-0. Here comes Doc. Boom. 2-run home run. But okay, it's 3-2. Here comes Hoopster. And bad defensive play. It's a 3-3 game. Okay? You can't. Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for having some problems with our musical section. So we're sorry for that. Okay, it's a 3-3 game. You can't win the game. You can't lose the game. But now, today is Monday, you're not going to pitch it 5 days later. I'm looking at how hard it is for guys to win. And Cashman Shunner told me something that was very comical. We were down at the iconic, the late now Mickey Mantle's restaurant where Hoopster was the greatest security chief they ever had there. And Quaker State had a promotion. Gordie Howe, the great Gordie Howe, the iconic Gordie Howe. Walt Frazier, ditto, ditto. Jim Catfish Hunter, boom, 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 and Bart Starr. Legends all, living legends. And we were talking, and Catfish told me something. Catfish said the reason why they had the guys out in the bullpen in the old days, he said, because they didn't want them in the game in the first place. Catfish said the reason why they had them, and if you look how those days were, okay, here's Doc, 7-2-3 inning, Sailor Bullpen, here's Hoopster. Hoopster pitched all of the eighth inning, all of the ninth inning. Not none of this four batters and you're done. When relief pitcher came in, the idea was he was going to fit. If he came in the fifth inning, you had your long relief and short relief. Okay, we're going to go long relief. We're going to bring Sea Wings in now. It's the fifth inning. You had your short relief. Okay, here's Hoopster or here's Jump Shot in the seventh inning. But you as a relief pitcher, you came in and you finished what you started. I can't understand it either, Jump Shot. I can't understand it either. Wait a minute. Jump Shot is in the eighth inning. We hope he can get into the ninth because last night, Doc threw 2/3 of an inning, Hoopster did an inning. The night before, Doc did an inning, Hoopster did an inning. And the day before that, Doc did an inning, Hoopster did 2/3. So we've had a combined total. I pitched 3 innings 3 days in a row, and I'm tired. Oh. I mean, you can't. I pitched 3 days in a row, 1-2/3 innings, and now all of a sudden, you can't bring me in? I mean, it's just, in the words of Howard West, it's just sad and touching.
It's amazing.
It's pitiful. It's
sad and touching. Real quickly, the Rangers win the first game of their series with the Montreal Canadiens, 7-2. I'm just worried, and Lady A's now here, I'm just worried that with the seven goals, they may have
tracked
it low.
Go Rangers.
Yeah, I just understand that. And then the great defenseman for the Montreal, PK, he has 12 goals already in the playoffs. Henry Lindquist did a great job. In fact, Lindquist hadn't won in Montreal since 2012. Hadn't won in Montreal since 2012. Can't say that no more. Looking for this to be a 7-game series. Montreal has to win this next game up there. Cannot come to the Garden at 0-2 and expect to survive. But stranger things have happened. Take a half up the Rangers twice. Had to go to 7 games in one. They were down 1-3. And strained in the Penguins, though. The Penguins fired the coach, but not the GM. So we'll see what happens. Cindy Crosby, we got a fine. Little high sticking. But we'll see what happens, though, with that. Doc Stanley for the Blog Talk Radio on Social Media Network. We'll be back in just a minute. We've got a good 50 minutes left here on Sports Left Blog Talk Radio. And still some more things to talk about. Let anybody move them, nobody say a word, because this has got to be said.
Oh,
that. Let's cruise on back to Sports and Depth on Block Talk Radio on the Crimson Guard Radio Network. Rangers went to the lead in their series against the Montreal Canadiens. The Heat are down in their series against Indiana Pacers. Don King has another heavyweight champ. And the two veterans of sports. Tony Lobianco gets saluted with his own dish this coming Wednesday. Wings, we'd like to read that piece one more time for us, another couple of minutes. Read that in there. Okay, we talk baseball. We talk some hockey, some basketball, some boxing. Indiana.
Don't forget California Chrome. It may not make it to the
That's the big thing. You know what? I want you to. You the guy wanted to come in with that Chrome. Won the first two legs of the Triple Crown. Now there's some talk. I mean, Ali Daw, affirmed was the last. Was it Ali Daw affirmed? Affirmed. I remember Ali Daw affirmed. 1978. They were one into. I remember that because. I went at the Belmont to that race, and wow, that's another race. But now there is due to, I believe, Chrome has some throat problems, and there's a mask that he's wearing that's not allowed at the Belmont wings.
It's like a nasal patch, the same thing as if a football player may wear or a track person to help with the breathing. That may become a problem, which the horse was allowed to wear that during the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness, but here in New York, that may be a that may pose a problem. May have to be.
Wait a minute. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I just keep patting myself on the back, and just all grace that is good. I mean. Nobody's heard this anyplace else. Nobody's heard this anyplace else. Wow. Go ahead. Give us proof on that.
So it's basically it's a nasal strip that they use on the horses to keep them being able to breathe and make that run, which we know that the Belmont.
You should have enough help in the car.
It has to be approved by the stewards and the gaming commission in New York to allow the horse to run. If the horse is not allowed to wear the nasal strips to assist in the breathing, that the horse may be pulled from the Belmont Stakes by its owner and trainer. So. That has to be, I think the Belmont Stakes is in 2 weeks, Saturday, June 7th.
It's not going to happen, so it's too much money involved. It's not going to happen.
Well, you don't think they're going to allow them to wear it?
Yeah, they should. Why not? They always get, every time a horse wins, they want to put some strict rules on something, man. They think the horse is going to be a Triple Crown winner. That's what I think. That's all I
think. And also... out there, too, did you hear with Wes Welker? He had won some money.
Oh, he gave him so much money. Yeah, he didn't want to give it. Yeah, I heard about that, too. He didn't want to give it back. Don't blame him. That's their fault.
It's being reported he was giving out $100 bills out there.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, they showed it. He was showing and carrying all that money on him, too. They showed it with a funny hat on. Yeah, I saw it.
But the racing park, they didn't make a big deal out of it. They said they hoped that he'd come back next year and win some more money and spend some more money. So that's just something to be watched here. And you heard this on Sports and Death, Doc Stanley Sports and Death Sunday wrap-up show on Blog Talk Radio via the Trust and God Network. Also, Hoopster, what do you think about the Bobcats going back to the Hornets on Tuesday?
Shut up, the Bobcats. I like Bobcats better than the Hornets.
It's amazing, and ladies and gentlemen, if you remember, it was here on Sports and Depth that you were first notified that Bin Laden had been taken out by the same force that you that California Chrome may be taken out, and Sports and Depth has been the first to alert you about a lot of things, and I've said this, Sports and Depth with the intellect of my esteemed posse so often turns not only into sports in depth, but the world in depth. We bring you sports of now and yesteryear and an inside look at both the sports and the performance of the sports. And with the intellect of my esteemed posse, Jumpshot Jones, Cincinnati Sea Wings, the Hoopster, and now join us real quick, the incomparable Mike Bellamy. It's the world in depth. And Mike Bellamy is joining us here real quickly in the latter moments of sports in depth. Mike, we're talking about a host of things, Cincinnati Chrome, the Heat, the Pacers, the Clippers going being clipped. Indiana won that game. Won it big. Had
106-97-96.
Okay. Yeah,
106-96. Well, not only did they win the game, they had five players. But Mike, last week, Don King, the greatest sport in history of boxing, well, his fighter won the WBA heavyweight champion of the world. Don said he was going to be in town pretty soon. That puts him back, and that mm-hmm. that's got to be a plus for boxing, Mike. I think anytime that what Don brings. No, go ahead, Mike.
No, you said his heavyweight won the which title?
Oh yeah, he won the WBA heavyweight champion of the world last week. And that puts Don back into the heavyweight scene, and I think Don King back on the scene is a big plus for boxing, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, especially where the heavyweight division is right now, it needs some life to it. So I think it's an added plus for sure.
Mm-hmm. And now the other thing, Mike, Khan is probably maybe the next opponent for Mayweather, and yet there's talk about him giving Madonna a rematch. What are you thinking? Will he give Madonna a rematch, or you think he's going to go to Khan?
I'd rather him go ahead and see him fight Khan. I mean, the thing is, I hope he retires undefeated, but as you get closer and closer to the finish line, it seems like it's tougher for him now, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to see him fight Amir Khan and then hopefully call him, unless he's going to fight Pacquiao.
But they're talking about with Pacquiao, they're talking about him and Marquez may fight again.
Mm-hmm. Well, no. You know what happened with that? That's something. Doc Stanley for the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Go Network. Maybe I can get June in here real quick on an interview. Well, our own Gilberto June Ortiz, GJ, the Latin side of working on boxing, said that Marquez himself said no. In fact, Marquez fought last night. I did get the results on that fight. He said that Marquez himself said no. Nah, I don't want to do a fifth Pacquiao. Boxing doesn't want to see a fifth Pacquiao. And if I'm correct, pay-per-view has even said they will not do a third Bradley Pacquiao. So people are tired of Pacquiao with his retread. I mean, Pacquiao has an astonishing amount of fights against fighters in his own stable. I mean, let's do a count. He did Marquez four times already, all right? Now, to go back, Marquez four times. He fought Cotto, who's from his own stable. He fought Joshua Cloudy, who's from his own stable. And then he had the audacity to fight Antonio Margarito from his own stable. Okay, we've already talked about Bradley. And we've got the two, three other fights that he's got. I mean, the guy's had about 12 fights from his own stable. I think there's still some interest. There's still some interest in Pacquiao Mayweather. Doesn't have the hunger.
I'd like to see Mayweather fight Sergio Marquez as well.
Well, he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that unless Martinez comes down. And then, I got to get Melly Mel on the show. Melly Mel has said this about Mayweather. He said Mayweather may be the fighter of the year, but he's never in the fight of the year. He never has the round of the year. Lady A says if you're going to call yourself the TBE, you got to do what the greats did. Ray Leonard went up to 160. He didn't tell Hagler, meet me at catchweight. Durant just said, hey, Durant, Leonard, meet me at a catchweight. Durant came up two weight classes to beat him. The Michael Spinks said, hey, Larry, let's do a catchweight for the heavyweight title of the world. Lady A said, you got to do what the greats do to be great. And Martinez, okay, Martinez is going to beat Cotto, for that concern. Now, the big thing there, last week, when great Oscar De La Hoya was in town, Oscar basically told me and a host of us in an interview that for all intents and purposes, we're going to see win, lose, or draw, we're going to see Pacquiao and Alvarez. He basically said, because I said, well, what about, you know, after this fight, boom, boom. He said, well, you know, and Oscar's thing is that even if he would lose, and we're talking about Cotto would lose, and for all intents and purposes, he should lose, but Oscar simply said, you know, he's not a true middleweight. In fact, let's listen to some Oscar right now, gentlemen. Oscar De La Hoya, Sports Center Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and God Radio Network. Oscar De La Hoya.
That's the exact number.
That's the
very common question.
Okay.